So it's Monday night, 7 o'clock, and you are listening to Women's Voices. My name is Blake Moore, and tonight I'll be speaking with Gowan and Sarah, the ladies of Eat Mendocino. We'll be discussing their vow to eat nothing but Mendocino-grown, raised, hunted, gathered, and wild-crafted food for 365 days, as well as foraging the future of agriculture and the triumphs and challenges of living off the land and sea for a year. But first, here's a song to get us in the Mendocino mood. That was a really silly song, and that, believe it or not, was maybe pretty obviously was recorded in the 80s, but it was recorded in London by a group called the Astral Project, which I think is really unique and interesting. So it with having the ladies come in, I had a really great time looking at, for songs about Mendocino. There's all these different songs, and that was the one that I chose. So before I bring up Sarah and Gowan, I want to first tell you that they, on Facebook, they describe themselves as two resourceful, dorky, and totally awesome girls embarking on an experiment in local eating. So starting on January 1st, 2013, they began exclusively eating food grown in Mendocino County, California, and they pledged to do so for 1 year. Gowan, and just to give you some background of each of them individually, Gowan was born in Mendocino County and grew up around animals and plants in a culture of activism and lots of grandma wisdom. She started studying metal arts in high school and went to two different art schools and eventually ended up working for an eco jewelry company and then running a gallery in Portland, Oregon. But eventually the pull got too strong and she ran away to be a farmer. After an OSU certification program and a bunch of volunteering and master gardener training, she worked on a 150-acre farm while managing a half-acre homestead. She always wanted to come home someday, and when a job opening as farm manager of Know Your Food Forest came available, she made the leap. Now she manages a 2-acre farm full of food and people. She grows produce, raises goats, chicken, ducks, and quail, and provides a place for youth and community to be in the garden. And now a little bit about Sarah. Sarah was raised among the tomato and zucchini plants in her father's garden in Chico, California. She loves to eat really good food and is a longtime local food enthusiast with a passion for permaculture and really good design. Sarah co-founded a consulting business called Social Media Sisters and is a communications strategist specializing in online communications. And she's helped hundreds of local businesses and organizations tell their story. She considers herself a professional dot connector and a bullheaded manifester. She's lived in Mendocino County for 7 years and has become fascinated with uncovering the abundant treasures of this place, from the people to the land and the sea. Sarah founded and hosts a series of farm-to-table community dinners, and in the spirit of building community through food grown and made with love. I love those bios, girls. Hi, and welcome to Women's Voices.
Thank you. Thank you.
They're really great. You guys are so unique and so yourselves, and it's so refreshing. I'm really glad to have you both here on the show today. And I just want to start with, there's a quote on your blog site that it says, "You cannot manifest what you want. You can only manifest what you already have," by Eckhart Tolle. And I'm just curious, what was the inspiration behind your decision to eat only within Mendocino County's 3,878 square miles for 1 year of your lives?
Well, this was Gowan's crazy idea, so she should probably take that one.
Okay, that's you.
Well, it actually started initially from an article I read in Grist magazine that I think was talking about some other critique of the locavore movement as being really elitist and unrealistic, and kind of talking about the like organic upper middle class yuppie movement and how disconnected it is from the actual needs of people in food deserts and in the inner city. And so it kind of started as this really pig-headed decision on my part to be like, well, actually, like, I'm totally broke and I can totally do this. And what it turned into, because I decided that I was going to try to do this for a year, and then I wanted to phase into it and, you know, kind of do 1 month on and 1 month off. And so I took this month in August last year where I was like, I'm going to be a locavore and not tell anybody, because that's a great idea. Because I was really, like, shy about it. I thought, like, you know, it was ludicrous and people were going to make fun of me, and I wasn't sure if I was going to, like, fail miserably. And so I was pretty much just living off of greens and like the occasional egg, and that was about it. Because my laying hens had all been wiped out by one raccoon attack, so I thought I was going to have eggs, and then I suddenly didn't, like a couple days into it. And what ended up happening is kind of the community just sort of, because I was doing the farmer's market at that point, kind of just figured it out and just kind of started feeding me. Like, without me really having to ask, like, everybody just kind of stepped in and saved me from myself. And it really became less about kind of rugged isolationism and became more about what an amazing community we have. And then when Sarah and I were talking about it and talking about it in kind of the larger context of farmers in Mendocino and abundance in Mendocino, it was really just such a natural place for Sarah to come in too. We started talking about this as something that we could do, you know, not really to be like, you know, rugged individualists and talk about everything we could do without, but instead really to show and celebrate what's here and what is really unique about this place and the growers and foragers and producers and everything everything anybody needs is here. And so it really just, it kind of became about that. And so, like, that's how this year happened, really, was, like, you know, me kind of, like I tend to do, just kind of throwing myself into the wind and, like, having some grace kind of come in after my pigheadedness and swoop me up.
And based on her experiment last August, there was no way I was going to do it. And I said there was going to be some conditions, that I loved the idea, but that a few things would have to change. One, we were going to tell everybody about it. Two, we were going to have salad dressing. because I went to too many dinner parties with Gowan where she would show up with this lovely bowl of chopped greens and tomatoes and other things from the garden, and there'd be nothing on it because she hadn't gone out to get olive oil. And I kept saying, there is olive oil. There is apple cider vinegar. There is no need for this salad austerity. So we're having salad dressing.
I totally, you know, and the funny thing is now I make the salad dressing.
Yeah.
In this partnership, I am the salad dressing maker. And it's really like my eyes have been opened to the light that is salad dressing.
And the third criteria was that we were not going to starve. We weren't going to do this whole going without thing.
And no, just eggs saved. And greens. You're going to.
No. That we were going to eat all of the abundance all of the time and not go through our own kind of low periods, which happened naturally, but that we were going to really make an effort to keep our fridges stocked.
Which, if you're following the Facebook page at all, you will see that we are not suffering.
No.
Not at all.
Well, okay, so then that kind of gets into the next thing is, before I say that, I love the idea of actually celebrating that it's possible to do. So what you're doing is paving a road for others and realize, you know, it's not about austerity, it's not about giving up so much, but actually it's like, it really is about celebrating how lucky and blessed we are in this county because we really do have it all here. Well, it's really here.
Absolutely. And it's also kind of by kind of throwing ourselves out there and making this really extreme statement and showing what is possible to do. I think it's also paving the way for people to take smaller steps. And, mm-hmm. you know, if we say like, oh, we're only going to eat local food for a year and here's how we get, you know, this, 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 and this, people at home can be like, oh, okay, well, I could do that.
Yeah.
You know, I could do part of that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have to do the whole thing, but, oh, that's easy. I can do that from now on.
Yeah, that whole easy thing, that's a funny one because in the last few weeks, a couple of people have said, well, it wouldn't be that hard here, or that'd be pretty easy. And I have a really mixed dual reaction right away. And
chocolate.
I want to say, yeah, you go and try it.
Live without chocolate for
but
a year.
Also, yeah, that's the point. That's why we're doing it, is that there are elements that are easy and difficult, and that's kind of the chaotic beauty of it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and it's also like so much a total lifestyle shift and so much planning and so much, you know, just locating resources. I mean, we had a couple weeks, you know, I mean, we had the Soviet style unsalted cabbage water soup.
Never again.
But you guys can get salt here easily. I mean, there's a lot of Mendocino County salt.
Well, you would think. But well, actually, you know it takes some doing.
Oh, so are you allowed? Okay, let me ask this question and then I'm going to ask the other question, because the question I have for you first is, you know, because obviously to work, you have to have rules. So I want you to talk about your rules. And the first question is that, can't you buy from somebody who produces, like there's a Mendocino salt company.
There's people
in Mendocino who gather salt.
And the little jars of that salt are very limited because they actually went out of business this year.
I see.
But there are lots of places where sea salt pools naturally along the coast.
I've gathered.
We are going to figure those locations
yeah.
out.
And then the other thing is working with seaweed, because
right,
you
yeah.
can always, seaweed adds a nice salt to things.
We made a lot of soup with seaweed as a salt. And actually, and yeah, we absolutely can harvest local salt, and we will, but apparently it's the wrong time of year.
It is. Yeah. It's a little, well, although it's been so dry, you know, you might actually get to sneak it in because of the way the weather has been. If it was really wet, it would be impossible, but it's surprising how dry things are. Okay, so my question back to you is, what are your rules?
You have them in front of you, and I don't even know.
I don't have them in front of me. No, I don't. I just have my questions in front of me.
I believe you, but I'm wondering if we were quizzed, if we would remember what they all are
sorry.
Right now. But
I can look up on Facebook.
No. We know what a lot of them are, and it'll be interesting to see if we've added new ones. I would think that's probably what might have changed since we wrote them. But our first primary rule was that we wanted to focus on defining local as Mendocino County produced.
Okay.
So there are a lot of different definitions for eating local and what a local food shed is that can range from, you know, what you grow yourself and what you produce to 150 miles from the place that you're standing at any given point. And our purpose here was to really focus on what existed within the boundaries of Mendocino County. So that's how we defined our geography.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. The 100-mile food shed idea, which is great, but it would actually include like all of like Napa and Marin and Trinity and Lake County. And we'd be eating cowgirl creamery cheese like every single day. And it would just be ridiculous.
Got to make your own cheese.
And we set those boundaries geographically because we wanted to discover what existed here that we mm-hmm. didn't already know mm-hmm. about. a few weeks ago, a friend of mine described Mendocino County as the place where you live next door to the person doing the coolest things that you will never know about.
Oh, wow. That's great.
And, you know, we can extend that to the place where there are people producing the most amazing food that you may never know about. And this was our personal challenge to both celebrate the producers that we did know, to get out in the woods and in the ocean and forage ourselves, and then also discover what was here that maybe isn't available in retail markets or isn't even really being produced on a commercial level.
Mm-hmm. Okay, rule one.
Okay, so other rules.
Well, we also talked about, you know, that while there are a lot of like really amazing local businesses that we really love and support and that we really hope, you know, everybody's patronizing, that, you know, that we would be very conscious about where everything was coming from, like no hidden ingredients. Mm. So, well, like, you know, we love Cowlix and we love Cowlix ice cream and we love what they're all about, but not every single thing. I mean, they put sugar in their ice cream. So, you know, for us, it was really about breaking all of that down and not having anything where we don't know what the origin is. And that includes everything, you know, so we're canning and making jams without pectin, without commercial salt, without baking soda, you know, without commercial yeast, you know. And so, like, we really wanted to focus on whole foods and on what is directly available in its raw form here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, by extension, the other businesses locally that are producing products, such as the breweries or the wineries, that aren't using 100% local inputs also didn't meet
yes.
the criteria. Not that we don't support them and support manufacturing and all kinds of ag industry in the county, mm-hmm. but we weren't going to be drinking Thanksgiving coffee and we weren't going to be drinking Anderson Valley beer. Although we have heard that there might be an estate beer that's made with local hops.
That we're very excited about.
If anybody knows, please let us know.
Yeah, that's part of the fun about going on the radio, because you can now even more people are going to know about it. Yeah. So, okay, there's two rules.
Another rule was that we're not always going to be in Mendocino County, so we needed to address the topic of travel through this year, that okay. we might be on the road, that we might go visit family, friends elsewhere, need to go to events. So how are we going to deal with this eating local thing when we were out in the world beyond the boundaries of the county? And we decided that we would eat local to that place, and not casually local to that place, but very specifically local. So we might have to pack some core ingredients, but if we're in Sonoma County, we can go to the farmer's market and we can purchase food there that's produced in Sonoma County, with the explicit goal of always eating as close to the farm as possible. So the grocery store would be sort of the last resort, mm-hmm. and that we would start with farmers markets or visit farms and try to maintain the integrity of this, knowing our source, where it comes from, and use those opportunities to learn about other places.
Okay.
We have not yet left the county this year because it's a lot of work to pack up one's life with this lifestyle. But if we do,
I believe it. Plus when you have goats and quails and chickens and everything uh-huh. else, you know, you've yeah. got your, you've got your work cut out for you. And I want to tell the listeners that you're listening to Women's Voices. I'm your host, Blake Moore, and I'm speaking with Sarah and Gowan, the ladies of Eat Mendocino. So we're talking about the rules. So there's four. Are there more?
I think that was our core rules, yeah. but we did, you know, I just want to highlight that for us, this project was about going all the way. So we don't have any exceptions in the diet. Yeah. There's not any, okay, but we each get to pick one food that we're going to eat no matter what, or we need this staple product because we can't survive without it. And that's sort of the whole point of this.
Right. And that statement is like the Barbara King silver caveat, pretty much, which, you know, people bring up her book a lot, you know, Animal Vegetable Miracle, and her family's eating local project. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's like what she did. And we love Barbara King Silver and we love her project and we love the awareness that she brought to local food, but no, it is not. They drink coffee.
So let me ask you guys this. What do you miss the most? What are some of the things you guys are just thinking, wow, I can't believe I'm giving this up?
I thought I would miss certain things that have not actually registered on the cravings index. I'm really missing my tea habit right now. Mm. And it's not a caffeine thing so much, but the ritual of all of my favorite different herbal and green teas and enjoying my hot beverages and sometimes a little bit of caffeine in the afternoon. But I'm really missing that variety of hot flavored beverage.
What are you doing now for your hot flavored beverage?
Well, tonight I'm drinking warm milk with honey, and oftentimes during the day when I'm out and about and working, it just comes down to hot water from wherever I can get it. But on a good day, it's hot water with lemon or infused with lavender flowers and mint.
Yeah,
and had I decided to do this project more than 2 weeks before January 1st, I would have dried and stored a lot of herbs and be a bit more prepared. But the whole premise of this is start where you are, do what you can with what you have.
Exactly. What about you? What are you missing?
You know, it's funny, like I've had a few like really random cravings for things. That are not really even things that I would normally eat. You know, like I found myself just really missing like just the worst, like gnarly, like gas station hash browns the other day, which I don't even know like how many years it's been or if ever like I've ever really eaten those foods anyway. But for the most part, I honestly really don't. The first and like the hardest hurdle for me really was coffee. Which I mean, I've had coffee every day since I was about 14 years old. I was gonna taper off and gonna taper off and gonna, and that was a lie. It was horrible.
It just turned into
cold turkey.
No, it was like the biggest cup of coffee she could drink that last week before we started.
Every day. Yeah. So she just made it worse when you finally gave it up.
Oh my God. Yeah. There were some Tumblr posts that happened. but actually I pick up coffee grounds at Headlands every week, for my composting. And the last couple times I've done it, it just smells awful to me. So I think, like, really, like, our tastes do change. And, you know, I'm not going back.
Do you guys think there might be a some sort of chance that you'll do this forever? To some degree? You know, like, you're obviously going to bring more locally produced foods into your everyday diet when this is over, I imagine.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question because I thought I ate local before, and I did in a lot of ways, but this has been so extreme and really been a lifestyle change more than just a dietary change. And there was a lot of adaptation that was necessary really quickly in terms of how are we going to find it? How are we going to get it? And you had to override a lot of the normal excuses for why we do what we do in the way that we do it, such as I don't have time, can't afford it. You know, I had a bad day, like all these normal things that make us human beings. And those are just not options. Like you have to make the time, you have to drive the extra many miles sometimes to get something, you have to collaborate with others to make it work out. And even when you don't feel like you have the energy to put a meal together, sometimes it's the best possible thing that you could actually do instead of going to eat out. We've had to forcibly bring ourselves to the kitchen many times because we were starving, you know, we needed to eat and there was no other way food was going to come. So, having to override all of these barriers are really, it's about more than the food. It's about living our lives in a little bit of a different way. Mm-hmm. And I don't ever want to let go of that. And I don't think we will be purists for the rest of our lives, but I think this has led to some permanent changes in my life, and there are things that will always be integrated.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I'm really excited about apparently somebody's raising dry beans in Sonoma, and yeah, like that would be great.
Like start raising your own dry beans, doing it yourself, you mean?
Well, yeah. And apparently you can buy like Sonoma raised organic, like, you know, cooking beans, and that's amazing to me. And so, like, you know, that things like that are exciting. I don't think I'm really ever going to go back to commercial food ever. You know, it is a really radical shift, and it's a shift from the idea of resources as just kind of out there in the universe, where you go to the grocery store and you exchange money for them, to resources as being about relationships. Like one of the many like dorky grandma things that I do is I like listen to audiobooks in the kitchen a lot, because I spend a lot of time in the kitchen. And I was listening to an audiobook of The Hunger Games, and there was this little snippet where this character who's been, like, you know, raised out in the boonies is sitting in this, like, lavish, you know, capital feast, and she's looking at this plate of food, and she's thinking, you know, how did they get all of these things? And is, like, looking at each food item, and is like, this would take me days and days of gathering, and I would have to talk to this person, and I'd have to trade them this, and I'd have to go find this, and, you know, it would take, you know, this massive effort to create this food that all these people think nothing about. And it just struck a huge chord in me, because I realized I had done the same thing looking at a burger, like, the day before, like, and it really is true. I mean, like, and, like, we could do it, you know, we would have to, like, you know, like, call Doug for the flour. We still have a little bit of salt from Ryland. We don't have any baking powder, but Melinda gave us a sourdough starter, so if we haven't managed to kill it, we could probably make buns. You know, we could probably get ground goat from Amanda, or we could do beef, and we could call Charlene. I have lettuce. There's no tomatoes at all.
Sprouts.
Onions. We could get onions from Scott. We still have that jar of pickles.
And we can make our own mayonnaise.
We can totally make with duck eggs. And Carmen, cheddar. We could do it, but it would become like all of these. You would be drawing on people, mm-hmm. not companies, not other resources. And it is a really radical shift to start thinking about nourishment that way.
And it would be the best burger you ever had.
Yes, it would.
Oh, yeah. 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 Well, you totally answered my next question, which was, what do you hope to accomplish? And I just think that you've said that, you know, in a sense.
There's
awareness.
More, though.
Yes.
Yeah, there is. We want to create a spirit of joy surrounding food and help reclaim that, because I think that's probably been the greatest benefit that we've gained from this. Is it has been very difficult and it's been challenging in certain ways, but it also has a reward that so far exceeds our normal relationship with food. And if more people can get drawn into living life in a maybe more simple way, but that's more connected, I think it opens up all kinds of avenues for joy and connection that have been absent.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and I also think that one of the amazing things about kind of like throwing ourselves out there and really just saying to the community, like, hey, this is what we're doing, and, you know, please feed us. And like, basically, like, allowing our immediate community and our environment to nurture us physically reveals all the ways that we're nurtured that are less concrete and are more emotional and are more about the ties that we really have to each other, you know, like these, like, very, like, physical concrete actions that are necessary for our sustenance, like, really kind of unravel this whole, like, emotional and cultural and spiritual life that is really specific to, you know, to the people and to the place.
Okay, so I another question I've been thinking about is, so what's a typical day's food? You know, I'm sure it changes and it's going to keep changing throughout as the seasons change. But say a snapshot of, you know, February 2013, what are some of the things that you find yourself, you know, foraging for? What's available locally to you? And are there seasonal things that you see moving through?
And are there things that we're getting a bit tired of? Yes, yeah. All of those things.
Well, probably not mushrooms, because we haven't had enough rain, huh?
Yeah, there were mushrooms in January.
But it's been a little... Although I found some blacks the other day. They're around, so...
We would like tips on mushroom locations, listeners.
Oh, good luck. I think you'd be better off having people bring you mushrooms for them to give away their spots.
We'll accept that, too. But we would like to bring some new mushrooms.
What have you eaten so far in the way of mushrooms?
We mostly ate hedgehogs and winter chanterelles. When we started, it was a bit late for the goldens, and so there were only a couple left.
Mm-hmm. We've also eaten a lot of jelly tongue mushrooms.
Oh, wow.
Yes. In honey, actually.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and of course, candy caps.
Lots of candy caps. Mm-hmm. But for me, growing food, like, January is really, it's all about braising greens, chard, kale, tree collards are amazing right now. Cabbage leaves for wraps. I'm growing a lot of sprouting broccoli, tons of salad greens, different lettuces, arugula, mustard greens, bok choy, tatsoi, spicy mustards, mizuna, baby carrots I'm starting to pull now, lots of radishes. So, you know, we do have lots of vegetables available. And, you know, not a lot. My goats aren't in milk yet. I'm just starting to get my first chicken eggs. I actually have one on the dash of my truck because I just found it when I was feeding the goats on my way here. They've decided to lay in the hay manger, helpfully. But it's like, it's really just been like this last week. They've just started. So, you know, I mean, it's still early days, but we've definitely got food.
We've been supplementing with a lot of cow milk, local meat, and potatoes. Lots of potatoes. Mm-hmm.
So many potatoes.
Everything you can do with potatoes.
Potatoes are great, though.
They are. So good. Yeah. And they were one of my favorite foods.
And they're so filling. You know, they just really kind of have that nurturing, you know, it's like the total comfort food.
Right. Well, and especially the way that John grows them. I've dug some at my place, but I just don't have the space. And, you know, John at Noyo Hill Farm put in an acre of potatoes this year, and we've been getting them from him, and his practices are just amazing. And I got a chance to talk to him about, you know, his, like, how he's fertilizing his potatoes and how he grows his fields. When we were on our way to the McFarm meeting, we carpooled with a bunch of people, and he's like, you know, putting selenium for them and all kinds of, like, just, he's just fabulous.
Do you feel there's anything, you know, obviously, so you've got your protein, you've got all your basic groups taken care of. Is there anything that you're longing for to let people out there know that you know is somewhere in the county besides better mushroom spots or more mushroom spots? Anything else that you want to ask people for?
Yeah, I want to ask people for what is their secret side crop that they're growing kind of as an experiment, and they have a little bit stored in their garage from last year and they want to share it with us. And I'm being general because we don't really know exactly what those secret side crops are, but I ran into Sophia Bates from the Apple Farm last weekend and she said, oh, you want some flaxseed? I've got some flaxseed in my fridge. I'll give you some flaxseed. And I said, yes, absolutely. And there are a lot of, you know, experimental things that are going on or, you know, not being really done commercially or retail that we wouldn't ever know about.
Like amaranth. I mean, I love amaranth.
I grew it last year.
Yeah, I love amaranth. It's my favorite seed grain. I eat it all the time, you know, mm-hmm. And it's not that hard to grow. It's just figuring out the harvest, doing it right.
I've got some.
You have some.
I have some.
So good. Well, any other grains that you're growing and...
I grew quinoa just for goat feed last year, and it actually did okay, even though it's not really a low elevation mm-hmm. grain.
I'm interested in finding corn. If people have corn, we'd really love to make polenta and tortillas.
Although really, if anybody just wants to feed us, please feed us. Like, especially like fishermen, crabbers, feed us crab, please. You
know? And we'll go ahead and say this. So how do they find you to feed you?
We're quite findable. We have a Facebook page.
Our whole life is on the internet
okay.
right now.
Yes, social media sisters. So why don't you just go ahead and give a little bit of information
okay.
about that.
So the home base for everything is our website, which is eatmendocino.wordpress.com. And that is where our blog is hosted. And from that site, you will find all of our contact information, including our email address, which is eatmendocino@gmail.com, and our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/eatmendocino. So all of those are really good ways to find us.
Okay, great, great. And then, so how's bartering working out? Because I'm imagining because a lot of stuff's not available commercially. Are you bartering? Or are you just by putting your names out there, people are contacting you? What are you trading for? How's that working?
We do a lot of bartering. Particularly like, you know, I have some friends that have a cow and in Comanche, and they just moved on to their very own farm, but they don't have a winter garden going yet, and they're all about greens, which I have in abundance, but I don't have any dairy, and so we trade. Mm-hmm. We definitely, like, we're very, very open to creative bartering, and it seems to just kind of be a natural extension anyway. It's kind of like what we as food growers do mm-hmm. is exchange things with each other, and, you know, here, try this, and, oh, I've got some of this, like, you know, really everything that we have tends to multiply anyway. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of, it's kind of a natural extension. And so definitely, like, if you've got something and you want to trade, and especially if you really like arugula, like, you should totally draw me a line.
Really good arugula.
Is it big? That really nice big?
It's gorgeous.
Oh, I love arugula.
Yeah.
Love
no, it. It's in a hoop house. It's all protected from wind. So it gets all nice and
spicy and crispy and yummy. So I want to let everyone know you're listening to Women's Voices. I'm Blake Moore, and I'm speaking with the ladies who vowed to eat nothing but Mendocino for an entire year, Sarah and Gowan. And also on your blog, you have a wish list.
We have so many wishes. Basically, our wish list is full of equipment and or skills, you know, are kind of embedded within that wish list, maybe reading between the lines, that we need a lot of new things to be able to do this project and people to help us mm-hmm. learn how to do those things mm-hmm. and assist us. So, you know, next to food dehydrator, you could see someone who wants to teach us how to make jerky. We wish for both the tools and the expertise.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if you have a skill that you would like to teach us, we will document the heck out of it and we will put it on our blog and it'll be awesome.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what about, like, some of your culinary highlights for the last 2 months?
Okay, so last week we had Thanksgiving dinner, unexpectedly. Why don't you talk about that, Gavin?
Oh, man. Well, do you remember when that guy ran into the power pole in Fort Bragg?
Yeah.
Well, we have the generator at, you know, Noyo Food Forest is a farm to school program. And so when I came into work that morning, the power was on. So I didn't really think anything of it. All systems were go. The next day, I had my first egg from these unbelievably annoying chickens that I got in an assortment of rare breed that are just, they're leghorns. Please don't get leghorns. They're a bad, bad, bad thing. And so I had these eggs, and so I went to go put them in the fridge, and I opened the door, and the light didn't come on. And so I was like, oh, I need to replace the bulb. And then I was like, oh, wait. My refrigerator in the barn got killed. And so I opened the freezer, and this massive, massive turkey, that's like two just enormous, like 30-pound turkey, I was raised by Julie, who's the Fort Bragg Farmers Market manager, and her partner Esme, who gave them to us for a farm-to-table dinner, and we'd used one of them, and then we still had this other one, and it had been frozen solid, and so for about a day and a half, it had been slowly thawing in a frozen freezer, and it couldn't be refrozen, and it was just like emergency Thanksgiving. Like, I was like calling everybody and just being like, I'm going to just go harvest everything that's in the ground, and we're just going to go to my house, and we're totally going to make this happen. And our amazing, amazing chef from the Farm to Table Dinner series, Matt Samuelson, just absolutely saved me. And he actually, like, you know, just like dropped everything and came over to my house and figured out how to make Thanksgiving dinner when you don't have bread and when you don't have apples and when you don't have like all the stuff that it takes to do that. Like, we made stuffing with winter squash and chestnuts and Jerusalem artichokes, and it was amazing.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah. So at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night in February, I showed up at Gowan's house for Thanksgiving dinner.
I know. And like my like poor, mostly vegan boyfriend who had been told nothing about this other than like a few cryptic texts that I'd had like a food emergency, like showed up at my house, like after his class at like 10 o'clock at night to this like just orgy of turkey just on
carcass,
every single surface.
Carnage.
It took both of us to lift it off the roasting pan onto the platter to cut it.
And how many people did you guys feed?
That night, there were six of us, and I'm still eating that turkey.
We froze a lot of it.
So you had turkey, you had stuffing, what else, and greens, and what else did you eat?
Salad, mashed potatoes, Mendocino County wine.
Yeah, we had cooked greens, and we had a fresh salad. We had mashed potatoes and gravy.
Oh, the gravy, of
course. The gravy was awesome.
Yes.
And you used for flour?
We have local flour.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What kind of flour?
It was just a wheat flour.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. The Mendocino Grain Project, Doug Mosel, is awesome.
And we were so fortunate to be gifted a grain share in the Mendocino Grain Project for this year. So we're going to be receiving barley, rye, a few different varieties of wheat and oats every month.
Oh, that's great.
Starting very soon, and we can't wait.
Oh, that's great.
It's going to be just a total life changer.
And what about spices?
So right now, my spice cabinet looks like some dried chilies, oregano and basil, salt, and fresh herbs from my garden.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I take everywhere with me when I
Totally doable.
Cook.
Yeah, that's what it is. I grew a lot of chilies last summer.
Which to me is like, that's it for me. If you say chilies, I'm like, yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
I love the taste of chili. So I think maybe you guys want to open up the phone lines.
Sure.
And so we're here in the Mendocino studio. Again, you're listening to Women's Voices, and Sarah and Gowan are here to take your questions about what it's like to eat only Mendocino for so far 2 months, but they've pledged to do it for an entire year. The number here is 937-5108, 937-5108. And in the meantime, like, what's your, say, foraging to bartering to harvesting ratio?
I would say the purchasing ratio is pretty high right now, actually, to all of those, because we don't have a lot of stuff that basically Gowan has produced. I don't have a garden. I do have some seaweed and mushrooms that we forage that are stored, but right now we're really reliant on, you know, apples that were stored from last year, potatoes that other people grew, meat that other people have raised. So, you know, there are few items that are available in retail stores, but those have been really important for us. I'm probably the number one customer of the Westside Renaissance Market in Ukiah right now, which is a fantastic little neighborhood corner store that was was founded by Scott Craddy and his wife. He runs the Ukiah Farmers Market, and it was turned into your local corner store. And they source as many local products as possible. All of their produce is 100% local, and many of the things on their shelves. And I'm in Ukiah every week for work, and so I go in there, and Scott feeds me, and he holds things back from the farmer's market if he knows I'm coming. And that has been a huge lifesaver through the dry season.
And where is that?
It's on Clay Street in Ukiah. It's called Westside Renaissance Market, and you can find them on Facebook.
Wonderful. I'm going to write that down. All right, we've got a call. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hi there. Good evening.
Good evening.
It's great to hear your experience. I have a question for you ladies. What has been, A, the hardest thing you had to give up, and B, one of the most unexpected difficulties that you've had about you choosing to restrict your choices like the way you have? I'm just interested to hear, you know, what have been some unexpected challenges that you had that you've come up with, and I'll take my answer off the air because I'm driving and I want to be able to listen on my car radio.
Thank you for calling.
So, I mean, I think when you have as much butter as you need, it's not really hard to give up anything. And I said to Gowan at the beginning of this project, I will sacrifice all kinds of things, but I will not ration my butter. I don't know what's been hardest for me to give up, but I do know what has been the hardest thing about doing this, and that has been learning how to cook things that I've never cooked before. Because when you approach cooking from a perspective of, this is what I want to make, so I'm going to go get those things, you usually know how to do that. You usually know, or you've figured out how to cook that item. And instead, sometimes you end up at home with a pile of things that don't necessarily go together and short ribs. And you've never made short ribs in your life because you were raised by vegetarian parents. And you think that you're going to have dinner in like a half an hour, and suddenly you realize they need to be in the oven for a lot longer than that. So learning how to do lots of new things, and often every day involves learning how to do new things and having no sense of how long that's going to take or if we even have the right ingredients, and then modifying everything. You know, eating it no matter what the outcome is.
that's it. Like, really creative cooking skills.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, almost everything has been awesome.
Oh, I believe it.
And even with, like, substituting tons of ingredients, and Gowan and I both don't really believe in recipes, so that's worked out, because we don't worry about deviating from them or just ignoring them entirely.
Yeah, that's the creative way to go. I cook in that school also.
What has been hard for you to give up?
Well, really, like, what's it, rather than like a particular food item, I think what's been hard for me to give up is my like really hectic lifestyle, really. The fact that, I mean, like, I work a lot. Like, my job is very, it's pretty demanding, and I had been in this pattern of kind of rushing out in the morning and, you know, working until later in the afternoon, and then like grabbing lunch really quickly. I mean, I was a regular at Harvest Sushi Bar, and you know, and then like not really thinking about, you know, I wasn't really going home and cooking an elaborate dinner every night, and I wasn't saving leftovers, and I wasn't, you know, I mean, I'm a farmer, so, like, you know, I was canning, and I was dehydrating, and I was doing food processing, but, like, on the day-to-day level, I did a lot of rushing around and then grabbing stuff last minute. And what I've really had to learn how to deal with is the fact that I can't do that anymore. Like, mm-hmm. I have to actually make time for self-care,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's a real thing. That's a real dramatic lifestyle shift.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The biggest thing we've had to give up is convenience.
Do you find yourself making a lot of things at a time, and that, you know, big portions, and then you can put them in the refrigerator and then eat from that, you know, take Tupperwares and carrying them with you in different ways, you know, glass jars.
Yeah, my mom just got us a set of glass Tupperware, and mm-hmm. it was like the greatest gift that I'd ever received in my life. I wish I did that more often, mm-hmm. and I hope that I get into the routine of preparing larger amounts of food more regularly and planning ahead, but I still do a lot of cooking at mealtime.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have another call. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question and a tip. The question is, what have been some of your wonderful surprises? Because I'm thinking, you know, the more local I eat, the more things I discover that are local. Actually, my diet is changing for the better rather than for the worse, the more local I get. But, of course, I don't go to the extremes that you do, but I try. The tip that I would like to share with you, because you mentioned short ribs and having to cook them in the oven for a long time, I just ate the third or fourth of a wonderful dinner that I made by simply putting short ribs and a lot of water and herbs and other things into a pressure cooker, and it makes this most amazing broth that you can use for all kinds of things, and it also makes the meat really tender, and it's a wonderful meal that's actually really quick. It takes about half an hour in the pressure cooker. So my suggestion would be, if you want to cook things that normally take a long time quickly, or if you want to cook inexpensive cuts of local meat, a pressure cooker is a really wonderful tool. It also cooks other things like grains and rice very quickly, and makes polenta really easy, etc. So I would love to hear about some of your the good surprises. Thanks.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. That's awesome.
We have been doing a lot of broth, and that's been one of the highlights actually of this diet, is the kind of the crock pot always going and having a lot of bone broth, and I've really enjoyed that. For me, one of the little gems that we discovered is a creamery called Pennyroyal Farm that is in the Anderson Valley. And I found their cheese at the Westside Renaissance Market. And it was like, if I could dream of the perfect cheese, that was this cheese. It was this aged, soft goat cheese. And it was called Bali's Mollies. And if you speak Bootling, then you know what that means. And I brought it home. And this was also one of the still to date, one of the best meals that Gowan and I ever had, because we had this cheese and some lamb cheeks that a friend had brought us, and we made fava bean hummus, and it was like one of our gourmet meals.
Oh,
and
God.
We cut open this cheese, and just the look on both of our faces, I will never forget it. And I had never heard of this creamery before, and I'm bringing this up because I actually got to visit there this very morning, and it is baby goat season. So this morning I got to tour the most beautiful facility and be surrounded by baby goats and baby lambs. And it was pretty much a dream come true. And this creamery is very up and coming. They're doing more construction every day, and it's soon going to have a cheese tasting room. And it's absolutely spectacular. Right now they don't have a lot of distribution, but you can get their cheese at Navarro's tasting room and at the Renaissance Market in Ukiah, and I don't know where else, but I would really encourage local stores to look into them. And because there's not a lot of commercial dairies in the county, and if you have ever known a goat person who really loves their goats, then you know what I mean when I say, like, the Erica, the woman who showed me around this morning, you know, is a goat goddess, and her world revolves around her goats, and she's been sleeping in her barn as it's birthing season so she can be there to nurse all these babies. And it was a magical place. And that was one of the discoveries. I had no idea it existed before this year.
Totally. And I asked in Harvest if they ever carried their cheese, and they said they are going to be getting some of the soft cheese a little later.
That's so exciting.
It is really exciting.
That's great. And I wonder, do you guys find do you use the internet for
kind of sourcing and finding out the ways to cook things and look for new things that, you know, you get an ingredient and you're like, well, I don't know what to do with this.
Well, definitely, actually. And what we found is that generally speaking, where we find recipes and stuff is on people's private blogs.
Yeah.
It's not as much like cooking websites.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, when you're like, you know, substituting like half your ingredients, like every single thing is on the internet and there's somebody else out there that's tried to make lavender shortbread cookies with no baking soda and with duck eggs and with no, you know, and with honey instead of sugar. Like there is somebody else out there that's doing that and that's documenting it. And so like we use the internet a lot for food processing, not as much for food sourcing. Food sourcing, it seemed like, at least in my experience, has been mostly word of mouth.
Mm-hmm. And has the word of mouth been spreading?
Slowly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Someone actually put you guys on my Facebook page. You need to interview these two for Women's Voices. That's really how I found out about you guys.
Oh, yeah, we love our Facebook fans. I know, thank it's you, wonderful. All of you.
It's wonderful. Looks like we have another call coming in. Yes, we do.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello. I'd just like to point out a few years ago, I was in Eastern Europe and Russia.
Do you have your radio on?
No, I just turned it off.
Okay, good.
And I noticed that they just didn't have the idea that you would fly in raspberries from Chile or something, because that's what you wanted at the particular time. But one of the things I noticed was I absolutely never knew there were so many ways to prepare cabbage and beets and cucumbers. And I think when you... if you look at yourself in terms of being creative with what you have locally, that you're going to find a whole bunch of different ways to prepare things like zucchini and that type of thing that you wouldn't have thought of before. So I just want to throw that out there.
It's so true. When we limit our options, we have to be a lot more creative.
Yes.
And it opens up all kinds of mysteries and gifts that we never would have known about. I also want to speak to the first point that caller brought up, because this actually kind of hits back to my roots and the bigger reason of why I decided to do this, aside from everything we've already mentioned. When I first moved to Mendocino County, I had a very, very global perspective, and I had studied international political economy in school. And I moved here to work with Thanksgiving Coffee because I wanted to be involved with international development work and international agriculture. And Thanksgiving Coffee Company is absolutely visionary in terms of its practices and working with small farmers cooperatives around the world and really focusing on economic development and empowerment. And it was this amazing opportunity to be doing work from a little town in California and impacting the lives of coffee farmers in Latin America and Africa. And I was very, very lucky to have that opportunity. And when I was working with the company and working directly with some of these co-ops, I actually got to fly to East Africa and visit cooperatives in Uganda, Rwanda, and Ethiopia. And beautiful, beautiful countries, and Africa like crawled deep into my heart. And one of the both illuminating and kind of harrowing parts of that experience was that I realized that we were working with farmers who were fair trade certified, some of them organic certified, and making all of the, you know, quote, right moves in terms of the international economy to get more value added incentives on their crops. And they were starving. That these farmers were facing what they called in Rwanda the hungry period, between when the crop was harvested and then when it would be shipped across the world and when they would get paid. And even if they were doing all of the right things, the reality was that these farmers were part of an incredibly volatile commodities market where the seed price could rise and fall, you know, with devastating impacts from season to season, year to year. And that there was something that was fundamentally problematic to me about farmers not being able to feed themselves, that they were growing things that weren't food. And when I looked back at, you know, Mendocino County and the place where I called home, I also saw that our main two crops were not food and that we couldn't feed ourselves. So that created in me this kind of radical shift. And I still believe in, you know, all kinds of different right things to do and looking at development in creative ways. But food security became this deeply ingrained passion for me and something I wanted to focus on no matter where I was working and what I was doing, looking at these questions of, you know, are we addressing the core issues?
Really important.
So raspberries from Chile, you know, not helping with that.
Yeah, right.
Necessarily.
Now, Whole Foods has peaches from Chile, same idea.
And they may be fair trade, and that is helping someone somewhere, but it's not the core fundamental issue.
You know what, caller? I don't think I'm going to be able to take your call because we're getting, we're running out of time, and I want to make sure the ladies have a chance to talk briefly about the farm to table dinner that's coming up.
Yes.
And I know that's important.
So we'll be hosting a farm-to-table community dinner at the Casper Community Center on Friday, April 5th. And if you haven't been to one of these events before, all I can say is that it's absolutely lovely. And we hope you can join us. All of the details will be on our website, eatmendocino.wordpress.com. And we're going to feature locally sourced food. And our chef, Matt Samuelson, will show up that morning and we will put all the food in front of him and he will say, okay, this is what we got. This is what we're going to make for dinner. And the menu will literally take shape that day. And we're thinking of firing up the pizza oven. And it's going to be a lovely time. And it's also going to be a fundraiser for our project to help us knock out some of those items on the wish list.
And I'm imagining that the meal will be exactly how you're eating, everything from the flowers to the spices. If it doesn't come from Mendocino County, it will not be at that dinner.
Correct.
Okay. And so they can find out about it where again?
On our website, eatmendocino.wordpress.com.
That's great. Well, I want to thank you both for being here. It's been a pleasure, and I know I could ask you way more questions, and obviously callers have a lot more to do, too. Just keep it up.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
Thank you so much, Blake.
Thanks for inspiring us. It makes me want to be even more local as well. So I want to remind everyone you've been listening to Women's Voices. I'm your host, Blake Moore, and I've been talking to Sarah and Gowan, two women of Eat Mendocino, and they are going to eat nothing but Mendocino food for the next year or until... maybe even longer, you know, you never know.